Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. In this episode, we'll talk with Casey Luskin of the Discovery Institute about a new study that suggests that what was purported to be fossil evidence that the Cambrian explosion may not have been an explosion after all is not what it seems. Casey, a pre-Cambrian ancient fossil was thought to be proof materialist Darwinists needed to refute the idea of the Cambrian explosion, the idea that life exploded in complexity during a specific period of time. How was this fossil viewed as a problem for the Cambrian explosion?
Well, if it was indeed an animal fossil, it would represent, as one scientist said in Scientific American, the earliest known animal fossil from about 600 million years ago. And so what that would mean is that this would be a very early animal fossil, and the Cambrian explosion would no longer be sort of the beginning of animal life in the fossil record. And so the way it would be seen is that the Cambrian explosion is no longer so much of an explosion. It would be sort of just the tail end of a very early period of evolution that began perhaps hundreds of millions of years earlier.
So basically, it would mean that we just didn't have enough fossil records, and if only we had found more fossils, then the Cambrian explosion would be explained away.
That's the way that they would like to see it. Yeah, they would like to see it is that this is evidence that the Cambrian explosion really is not this abrupt appearance of animal life, and instead there were animals tens to hundreds of millions of years earlier, and there's something else going on other than an explosion in the fossil record.
What's new about this old fossil?
Well, a paper was published in the journal Evolution and Development back in September and October of 2012, which found that Vernanimalcula is actually not an animal fossil. And the paper actually used very strong language to make this conclusion. It called the interpretation that Vernanimalcula is an animal fallacious. And it said, quote, "There is no evidential basis for interpreting Vernanimalcula as an animal, let alone a bilaterian." And so you really are seeing, I would say, some uncommonly strong language here in their argument. And basically their argument is that, in their own words, the structures key to animal identity are effects of mineralization that do not represent biological tissues. And it is not possible to derive its anatomical reconstruction on the basis of the available evidence. So basically what they're saying is that these structures of this fossil, which were thought to be evidence that it was an animal, were not, in fact, biological tissues that became fossilized, but they were simply the effects of mineralization in the rock, and they were something else. And they're not actually sure exactly how to interpret the original anatomy of Vernanimalcula, if it had an anatomy, because basically what you're looking at is inorganic rock structure and not something that represents biological tissue. So they say the conclusions of evolutionary studies that have relied upon the bilaterian interpretation of Vernanimalcula must be called into question. And real quick, a note on that jargon term, bilaterian. Bilaterians are a type of animal. We are bilaterians. We have bilateral symmetry. We have a left side and a right side that are symmetrical, and then a front and a back. And so many animals, you see really all vertebrates, insects, and many other animals that we're familiar with are considered bilaterians. And so basically, if Vernanimalcula is not a bilaterian or not an animal, it was not our early ancestor, and it did not show that the Cambrian explosion was somehow not an explosion.
How could such a mistake be made?
Well, this is where the story gets a little bit interesting. And it goes back, I think, to a paper that was published in 2005 by a USC paleontologist named David Botcher. David Botcher, if any of our listeners saw the movie Flock of Dodos a few years ago, which was this sort of air-filled, would-be expose on intelligent design. It made a lot of mistakes, and it was really just more of sort of a comedy than a serious film, I would say. But David Botcher was featured in this film as an evolutionary biologist who had difficulty communicating his feelings without sort of coming off as an angry, uptight scientist who wasn't very good at communicating. I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know that in 2005, Botcher published a paper in Scientific American where he praised Vernanimalcula as, quote, "the oldest fossil animal with a bilateral body plan yet discovered," unquote. And as a result, he made this argument where he said that if Vernanimalcula really is this 600 or 700 million year old animal, then he says this suggests that the Cambrian explosion was less of an explosion and more of a flowering of life. Okay, so that's Botcher's argument. But he makes some other comments in this paper that were quite revealing. He talked about how he was one of the co-discoverers of Vernanimalcula when it was discovered in China back in 2002. And he said in this article, quote, "We had come to China in 2002 to hunt for microscopic fossils of some of the earliest animals on Earth. Specifically, we were hoping to find a bilaterian." And he later goes on to say, of course, what we were really focused on finding was a bilaterian fossil, basically. And so he came to China to find a bilaterian fossil. And wouldn't you know it, a bilaterian fossil is exactly what he and his colleagues found. So this sort of raises the question, is there perhaps some confirmation bias going on here? Where a scientist steps out to come to some kind of a result, and lo and behold, that result is exactly what they found. They were expecting to, and hoping to find something, and that's what they found. And is it possible that the interpretation of the evidence was really not very objective and was really not a fair scientific study? Well, this is not my opinion that that's what happened here. This is the opinion of the critics of Fernanda Malcila, who are all evolutionary biologists who published this new paper in Evolution and Development just a few months ago. And I'd like to read, David, what they wrote in their paper about why they think that David Botcher's study was subject to confirmation bias.
Yeah, please do.
Really striking to hear in a scientific paper. This is what they say. "It is likely that the fossils referred to as Fernanda Malcila were interpreted as bilaterians because this was, as our epigram betrays, the explicit query of its authors. If you know from the beginning not only what you're looking for, but what you're going to find, you will find it whether or not it exists. As Richard Feynman famously remarked, the first principle is that you must not fool yourself, and you are the easiest person to fool. After you've not fooled yourself, it's easy not to fool other scientists." And they go on to say, "Conversely, once you have fooled yourself, you will fool other scientists." And so Fernanda Malcila has been marshaled in evidential support to the timing of bilaterian evolution and the multifarious bilaterian innovation. This little spring animal has taken on a life of its own, a life it never had in the Neoproterozoic. It is our hope that Fernanda Malcila will now be laid to a merciful rest, freed from the heavy burden of the undue evolutionary significance that has hitherto been heaped upon it. So this is what these scientists write in Evolution and Development. They think that David Botcher and his colleagues, and by their own words, they came to China to find an early animal fossil. They convinced themselves that's what they had found, but that's not what they had found, and they really kind of lost objectivity in looking at the evidence. So I think that sort of completes the story here of what supposedly happened with Fernanda Malcila.
Well, other Precambrian fossils are also posing problems for those trying to explain away the fact of the Cambrian explosion. Ediacaran fossils, long been used as evidence against an explosion in the diversity and complexity of life in the Cambrian era, are now suspected of being unrelated to current life forms and perhaps not even fossils at all. Explain that.
Yes, that's right, David. And this is a really fascinating paper that was published in the journal Nature in December of 2012. So another very recent paper, which looked at this group of fossils, as you mentioned, the Ediacaran fossils, which are sort of these enigmatic Precambrian fossils that have been very difficult to interpret. A number of scientists have looked at these fossils, and they've wondered, okay, were these animals? Were these plants of some kind? Were they bacterial colonies? Were they not fossils at all, and they were some kind of inorganic structures? What were these fossils? These Ediacaran fossils have long been sort of puzzling to paleontologists, but some have claimed that they actually were this long-sought, quote-unquote, solution to Darwin's dilemma, namely the lack of Precambrian fossils. As a matter of fact, a 2000 article by J. William Schaff in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences actually said that the Ediacaran fossils did help solve Darwin's dilemma, and they really were sort of these missing Precambrian fossils that have to explain where the Cambrian animals came from. But this new paper in Nature really blows that argument to pieces. It says that the Ediacaran fossils were actually fossils that formed on the land, and they were not marine fossils, so therefore they could not have been ancestors to the marine fossils which appear abruptly in the Cambrian explosion. And maybe I should make that clear. The fossils which we are aware of from the Cambrian explosion, they're all marine animal life. And so if the Ediacaran fossils were something else, something that lived on the land, then they would have been very different from the animals which appear abruptly in the Cambrian, and they could not have been the ancestors of the Cambrian fossils. And so the scientist who published the study in Nature, Gregory Redelach, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from the University of Oregon, when commenting on his study, he said that, quote, "This discovery has implications for the tree of life because it removes Ediacaran fossils from the ancestry of animals," unquote. So what that means is that the Ediacaran fossils do not solve Darwin's dilemma, i.e. the missing pre-Cambrian fossils, which were ancestral to the fossils in the Cambrian explosion. And it's a really fascinating paper, and I think that this is going to be a very groundbreaking study that's going to contribute a lot to this debate for years to come.
First, it was junk DNA. Now this seems like a lot of the weapons that were used to attempt to humiliate or denigrate the intelligence design movement are falling apart.
Well, I think that this is the progress of science here, David. It's good to see that science is self-correcting. Even though a lot of folks have cited fossils like the Ediacaran to sort of make you no longer think that the Cambrian explosion really was an explosion. I remember when I took paleontology courses as an undergraduate that sometimes my professors would cite the Ediacaran fossils to explain why does it seem like the Cambrian fossils appear abruptly. Well, they really don't. We have the Ediacaran fossils. We have some other pre-Cambrian fossils. And so you'll need to worry about this so-called abrupt appearance of the Cambrian fossils. And so what we're seeing here is that science is being self-correcting. And this is actually encouraging to see. It's encouraging to see journals like Nature publishing these high-profile papers that really are challenging key evolutionary arguments. And the question is, I think, when is some of this data going to filter down into, say, the textbooks, into what students are being taught, that there really was a Cambrian explosion and that these Ediacaran fossils really don't represent the pre-Cambrian animal ancestors? So that's another thing that remains to be seen. Because, you know, David, we have seen this time and time again. When you look at the technical literature, you could find all kinds of evidence that challenges key claims of Darwinian apologists. Whether or not that evidence, that information that's in the technical literature will filter down into the public discourse, will filter down into the textbook and what students are learning, that's sort of a secondary question. But the bottom line is the notion that we can look at the technical literature and find evidence that challenges core evolutionary claims, this is nothing new. We've had these kinds of papers for many years. It's great to see. I just hope that it doesn't just remain in the technical literature and the public can find out about this kind of stuff.
Casey Luskin, thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me, David.
That concludes this edition of ID the Future. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting the efforts of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Go to discovery.org, click the Science and Culture tab, then click the Donate button on the top right-hand side of the page. This podcast is copyright the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.